Welcome to the Places Plus podcast. I'm your host, Alan Cameron. In this podcast, we'll step into the world of shared and public spaces where you'll learn the strategies, tactics, and attitude to become profitably and successfully involved in the in-between spaces of our towns and cities. Hi, everyone. It's Alan Cameron here, and welcome to another episode of the Places Plus podcast. Today, I'm excited to have David Vanikek joining us. David, fantastic to have you here.
Hi, Ellen. How are you?
Good, good. Now, David, in terms of your work, you are the CEO of Johannesburg Inner City Partnership in South Africa. You've worked as an independent consultant at Places for People, a company you founded. You've worked as the CEO of the Private Student Housing Association. And before these roles, you were the head of the Neighborhood Development Program run by the National Treasury of South Africa for 7 years. And you've held various other senior posts in the private and public sector. During the past 2 years or so, you've contributed towards turning Johannesburg's inner city into a network of walkable routes. And we're going to discuss this more as the topic for this podcast. Before we get there, though, I'd like to take you back down memory lane, David, and ask, how did you know that you wanted to get involved in the real estate sector?
Yeah, that's you are taking me back, I must say, Alan. To probably the age of, 15 to 18, I guess. And, during those years, I always, there was so many things that I was interested in, but it did seem like the whole kind of spatial organization of things, the where things are, was actually a question that I always came back to. And then, at that stage, I started to learn what was available in the tertiary sector. And came across this thing called urban planning. I guess, in a way, the rest is history. I did study at the University of Pretoria, urban planning. And after that, actually many years after that, I was working, working at the city of Joburg for a whole number of years. And then I started doing a master's degree in real estate. So property development, property management, valuation. So yeah, that's kind of how that happened from a educational and
obviously the graduate degree of town planning and the master's in real estate they're related, but they're also quite distinct. Over the years, what inspired this change of focus?
Yeah, I guess starting off, I actually worked for national government before I worked for the city of Joburg. And was dealing with more with city level kind of at that stage it was called master planning. I guess at this stage you can refer to SDFs, spatial development framework, that kind of a scale. And that was all very interesting, but I realized very soon that until this day that this huge kind of gap between the public and the private sector is what is causing so much damage. And because of that, I felt I wanted to learn more about what makes the private sector tick. Because obviously, as town planners, as urban planners, we work a lot with government. And we get to understand the policies of government, the principles that underpin planning, and management, and urban development. But the private sector, of course, is the key player in actually creating these real estate. So for that, from that point of view, I said, let me understand what makes the private sector tick so that I can, perhaps try and get these two sectors closer to one another.
And that is a really interesting introduction to the Johannesburg Inner City Partnership. And obviously a great understanding for you to be able to take into that environment. Before we get into the partnership, were there other key steps that prepared you for some of the opportunities that you're busy realizing in your current work?
Yeah, I guess what happened is at some point after I was with the city for many years and got involved in, I would say, all of the different aspects of urban planning and development, not so much urban management. In fact, urban management, wasn't really a thing at that stage. I mean, it started, so it was still very new. But what happened is after I left the city, I did a stint in the private sector in the ICT, in the information and communication technology sector, as a strategist. And then after that, I said, no, I need to return to what I was actually trained to do, and landed up at National Treasury Program. And there we did a variety of things, you know, assisted cities with strategic thinking and investment decisions, mostly in townships, creating key nodes, but also, you know, dealing with stakeholder matters, you know, on a sort of a wider city. And because of this, we were approached by some of the private sector stakeholders to assist with a Randburg case. I forget the actual date of it. It was probably about 2015. And this is where there were some huge issues that were questioned by the courts around urban management. And for that reason, we were requested to, you know, start some kind of a national conversation. And that is when I created called SAPME through my work at National. And SAPME was a South African, so brought together some of the national, as a public and private sector. And the whole purpose there was to devise urban management policy, and also to look at the legislation, because the legislation, you know, that we have at this time is very enabling. So as part of those stakeholders, met with some of the city improvement district players, including Johannesburg. And it was then that, you know, the chairperson of that forum, Anne Stephanie, approached me and requested that I also, you know, assist with some of them in Johannesburg. And one thing led to another. I found myself consulting after I left Treasury for consulting, places for people, consultancy to a variety of clients, including the Janet. It's just a better thing, a more permanent thing.
Okay. Now, for those listeners who don't know, what is the Johannesburg City Partnership, and how does the nature of the organization lend itself to starting a project that focuses on particular streets and public spaces?
Yes, so the Johannesburg Inner City Partnership focuses on the inner city of Johannesburg, the central business district. The kind of formal definition of that is urban development zone tax incentive boundary that the city to treasury, and you know that kind of. But essentially, if you're flying over Joburg, where you see the high density books, that's the inner. And what the JICP does, is a non-profit company. We're also a public benefit organization. Our entire operations expenditures funded by donations from private sector companies that are located in the inner city. And what we do is, they're not members. It's quite important to understand they're not members. They are donors, because all of the work that we do in the JICP is not focused on those. It's actually focused on all stakeholders that you get in the inner city of, you know, the investors that I've mentioned, but also homeless people living there, working, students, all of the different sectors of the economy. And what the JICP does, you know, in a nutshell, is we embark on a whole number of projects and stakeholder engagement to work towards a better inner city. We've got kind of three words that sum that up: clean, safe, and welcome. So that in a nutshell is.
All right, thanks. Now, you mentioned the idea of bringing or working alongside stakeholders. Can you tell me a bit more about the requirement for stakeholders to be involved in a project like the Walkable Network? How does a project like this get conceptualized, considering the structure of JICP?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, stakeholders is really, I've mentioned projects, and we have a whole bunch of it, but at the heart of all of these projects is stakeholder. That is essentially what we do. So you could say that the projects without the stakeholder, Excel spreadsheets and Gantt chart budgets, and really the energy that we, you know, so happy to be working with. So let's just take the Walkable Network as an example, because it's a bit different, you know, for each project. But let's take the Walkable. About 3 years ago, we realized that, you know, in this process of finding ways to improve the inner city for everyone that uses it, it's impossible to actually deal with everything, you know, at the same time. Resources, too complex, you know, and that kind of thing. So we said, let's follow an approach of what is known as spatial targeting. It's a term that I think is becoming more and more familiar. But it's essentially saying is, if you're looking at a large area, what are the key components within that large area you need to focus on And if you get those, if you get that 20% right, let's just say, let's just use the 80-20, if you get that right, you then actually causally have spin-offs. So the Walkable Network is a spatial targeting approach. We did, we have a forum in the inner city of Joburg called the Inner City Think Tank. Just consists of some of the key CEOs, most of the companies that are investing and developing. And we approached the inner city think tank and asked them, you know, what about this idea? Let's get stakeholders together. Let's have a number of workshops. Let's get inputs and identify those streets in a grid of a mesh pattern that if we can get those streets to work for government, then, you know, the spin-offs over time would, I guess this is slightly theoretical, but the vision is that over time we'd get those streets would slowly spill over into the others. And the key thing about this is to use the limited resources of all stakeholders, public sector, private sector, society, to focus in all sorts of projects and initiatives, you know, whole different kinds of projects. But to use that to basically reach private sector. So, you know, because that's really the key. If we're talking about improvement, if we're talking about, you know, in the inner city, we can do all sorts of things. But if we don't have private sector investment and also urban management of previous investment, then, you know, previous efforts would be useless.
Now, with that in mind and the process that you've gone through up to this point, how are the routes of the Walkable Network selected?
As I said, we had a number of stakeholder processes. And so what we did is we created a small technical team. We had a, you know, large number of the relevant stakeholders, you know, from the public, private and society sectors. And a small technical team was created, consisting of, once again, more or less the same sectors. We even got some private sector consultants, architects and designers, to also give some time free. And we put together a number of principles that would then inform such a principles and criteria, inform the identification of what we should, you know, go for. And, you know, I can't even remember what most of those principles are, but they were things such as, I mean, the most important hanger, if I call it that, on which all of these other principles were hanged on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if we can connect destination and origin. So what are the strategic, you know, destinations in the morning peak and the noon peak and the other way around? And how do we, if we connect all of these, if we have lines and say sort of conceptually people are moving from here to here in the morning and from there to there in the afternoon, what does that mean? You know, how do we then identify a number of streets that could kind of fit that conceptual pattern, you know, closely? So that was the overarching guiding principle. And then we looked at a whole number of other things, you know, where pedestrians are already walking, people are walking, obviously, for the reason. We looked at where, for instance, where the existing city improvement districts are located, and a whole bunch of other criteria, you know, obviously, where the public transport facilities are, where the key workplaces are. And put that all together in a kind of a evaluation framework, and then took that back to the larger stakeholder. We also used a similar process then. Once we'd identified all of the streets, there are 5 east-west routes, and there are 7 or 8 north-south routes. We also used another process to say, out of all of those routes, what is the pilot? And we came up with a kind of an upside down T in Johannesburg. I'm not to go into too much detail, but essentially connecting the Magistrates Court in the west along Main Street through Gandhi Square, Carlton Centre, APSA, taking a dogleg into Fox through Jewel City and up to Jeppe Station, and then coming back again to Gandhi, going up in a northerly direction, Jabez Street up to Park Station. So that was the, you know, that is the pilot.
Okay. Very, very interesting. When should this pilot be successful and roll out to the other routes that have been identified? What would the visual impact of the work look like? I'm walking down the street and maybe I haven't been in Johannesburg for a number of years. This work has been completed in the meantime. What is the visible change that I will notice in that environment in an ideal case?
Yeah, so I think the important thing is that we need to understand that when we talk about getting stakeholders to focus on the projects that they focus on, essentially anything. So an example of what has already happened in, when is it, June or July last year, along the north-south pilot, Jabez Street, the city, Johannesburg Development Agency, JDA, had a tactical urban project called Hello Jabez, where they activated three or four blocks over a period of 3 weeks, and they had different themes there. So that was, obviously that's a tacticalism project. And we, by the way, would like to use tactical urbanism more and more as a standard way to actually conceptualize, so to say that if we want to do, if we have a whole sort of project pipeline, before we even start to test, and, we can get back a little bit later to the downtown music hub. It's along another pilot closer to Jewel City. So it's on Fox Street between the EPSACOM and Jewel City. And there we're also looking at some project to activate a corner site. It was a hijacked building, recently purchased by a developer. Take that and change that into, firstly for musicians, a kind of open mic amphitheater setup, but also to be community open space or other times. So
that's incredible.
Yeah, nice. So that's quite an amazing project, yeah. But Alan, just to quickly, sorry not to interrupt you. So tactical urbanism is kind of one urban management is incredibly important. And I did mention that we have a number of inner city improvement districts, but they don't cover the entire inner city. So what you have, when you're walking along, you'll notice, obviously you won't know what the boundaries, but you'll see things are going better than in other areas. There are areas where you find all sorts of challenges, such as, substance too safe. It's kind of not something that you have to wonder about. It's very... So at the moment, we have kind of some of the improvement districts are resourced more than others. So that's also a change. So kind of more in the western side, southwestern side of the inner city, those improvement districts are, if you walk along, then some of those compounds probably doesn't even feel like a typical, let's say, African city, more of a sort of, let's say, western kind of vibe that you'll especially. So we're not saying necessarily that kind of look and feel, the entire treatment there, the paving, we're not saying that necessarily was walkable network. But to a certain extent, it is, in the sense that these streets will be clean, they'll be safe, they'll be vibrant, hopefully they'll be. The idea is that if they're clean and safe, and we have a couple of the projects located at certain, say, private sector investment will happen with a lot of ground floor activation in terms of, shopping, lines of service and to see on the wall, but also then public sector, so, things like SASOP, any kind of. And of course, the community facilities, the parks, there are a number of parks scattered, which are quite close, key focus. So, in a sense, these are the kinds of improvements that you'll see. But I guess what's more important, the one thing is to say what we'll use. But I guess what's even more important is how. Sure. And the idea is that you're safe, you would like to linger, like to stay there, sit on the bench, have a sandwich, talk to people, meet people kind of thing, engage in public spaces. I think that is so.
And I'd like to get onto that a bit later. I would like to just flip to this idea of this being an ambitious project. It's technically, outside of official support. It wasn't initiated by the city, the local authority. How did the city of Johannesburg react to the walkable network, especially in their efforts to encourage non-motorized transport projects in the inner city?
Yeah, no, thanks. That's a great question. I don't think it's possible to do this kind of thing. The city is. So what we did is, once we sort of got the go-ahead from our inner city think tank, the first thing and say, listen, this is the idea. We can stakeholder workshops. Let's get the relevant department, Johannesburg, possibly, and those entities involved. And, but maybe just, if I can just take one step back and perhaps just say that the GIC, a partnership with the city in 2016, and we work through a unit in the inner city office. So, that helps a lot because we have this formal partnership. We're busy with, it's not as if we kind of just knocked on the city's door and said, hello, here we are. We're busy with a variety of projects and, depending on the kind of a project, there's sort of different entity in those projects. So when we did this, the city was keen, also then joined in the process and was present on that technical task team that I mentioned. We had someone from the development planning, so urban planning department was there. And you know, so the city was involved from the start. It was a GICP initiated project, but the city was always involved. And then at a later stage, I would say probably about 6 months to a year after we started, perhaps let's go for the 6 months, the city started its own project called the Inner City Transport Master Plan, which, you know, has many more objectives than a walkable network. But what we did is we started kind of, you know, linking the two processes. So when there was progress on our side, we'd feed that back into the master planning process and the other way around. And now the transport master plan has been completed and the walkable network is a component of it. So it is a formal city project. GICP is still the coordination, the stakeholder engagement. There are a number of tasks in a working group, a whole institutional setup. Perhaps I'll just quickly mention what those task teams are.
Yes.
There's one for development, activation, and placemaking. There's one for safety and security. And there's one for environmental management or urban management.
Okay. Very interesting and really encouraging to see a local authority take a new idea and work with it to the point where it's incorporated in their master plan. The one thing that occurs to me is as the GICP is donor funded, the projects are taken on by developers in the area and those with an interest in the area, the outcomes are not completely predictable. It sounds like that it's a journey, exactly as you described it, whereby there are a lot of unknowns, but it's a journey that a group of people are determined to take together and see what good they can do with that. Does the city not see that as a type of a risk? How do you navigate that question?
Yeah, and you know, Alan, to tell you the truth, not only the city, but other stakeholders, you know, the kind of first question, you know, we're always trying to bring in new stakeholders that can add value, task team. And the kind of first question people ask is, okay, so you want to do all of these things, where's the funding coming? And, you know, so we basically, you know, it is a journey. So we're saying, let's not worry about that now. If we can get people from different sectors to focus on the same areas, that already is a big thing. And then let's go on this journey, identify the projects, prioritize them, go together and get the funding. So, you know, from that point of view, I guess this is a spatial focus area. That's kind of all it is. I don't want to say it's all, because it's quite a lot, but it's all it is really, because to go back to the city, for instance, and the risk, if I just can quickly jump back to that downtown music hub example, although we'll be starting with a tactical urbanism project, the idea is obviously to a permanent installation there. So, you know, from that point of view, we have already made an official submission to the city of Joburg for CapEx fund. So that process, even though, you know, it's now, we could say that it's a walkable project, one of the projects on, you know, in the overall program, there's still an official process. We're submitting documentation, budgets, cash flows to the city process through the IDP process. It still gets considered. And we are hoping that in May, when the city takes the final decision, they will agree to fund that as one of the projects. So, yeah, I guess that's it's a bit of a, you know, it just focuses everybody's minds. And as I, you know, when I refer to that Hello Jaber tactical urbanism project, we're also hoping that when the city, you know, kind of, you know, goes on with life and identifies projects, that they will use this spatial footprint of the walkable network to also then co-locate and the energy and the projects on. And to a certain extent, it's happening. So Hello Jaber being an example. But, you know, we don't have control of what the, but that's why, you know, our role of marketing and communication, advocacy, lobbying, we're always kind of talking about the walkable, so that, you know, the departments such as the JDA, the development planning, economic development, that they're aware of this. And when they, you know, are conceptualizing, that they actually have this in the back of them.
And my expectation is your pooling of resources around specific focus areas, keeping these focus areas in the minds of decision makers at the local authority, also attracts other opportunities to leverage the different types of investment. certainly there's been this music hub, which is an excellent initiative. What other types of opportunities have come around, or even that you perhaps have only started to talk about in terms of leveraging private sector investment along the walkable network area?
Yeah, perhaps just to give you the background of the Downtown Music Hub, which is, you know, is an existing recording studio. There's a museum, actually, of South Africa industry. It's fantastic. So, you know, we've partnered with Hub, and ideas to create a new corner site would be one, all sorts of other discussion in itself. But the kind of way that this came about is we have, apart from the walkable network, we also have five precincts across the inner city that have a precinct lens. Okay, so, and obviously the walkable network component of each of these precincts. So typically we would look at these precincts using the walkable network as our main kind of spatial direction, but also then come up kind of a capital web approach, you know, for investment, using the walkable network, as I said, as the key, but also looking at other options. So In this whole process, you know, when we met, we have a Village East precinct. That's actually the southeast part. And, you know, as part of those discussions, the Downtown Music Hub joined at one point. We, you know, went for a site visit, and one thing led to another. We, you know, we realized that the developer that mentioned earlier on had purchased two hijacked buildings just opposite the downtown. You know, just from that, one thing led to a massive thing going. The music hub bought the developers' properties and developers in the vicinity, the city as well. So it's kind of just sort of organically. So I think that's an important aspect to this, is the whole organic nature. And, you know, funding is always a challenge. But if once you get the stakeholders together and they start talking and the energy is there, and you've, you know, put together, for instance, a funding application, you can now be submitting that to any kind of, you know, process that's coming up. So that's been quite a good journey. And we'd like to, there's a huge learning for us, actually, is that we need to know more about where our kind of private sector, not only our donors, but all private sector and developers and investors and property managers, where they're located, where their clusters, where their little nodes are, so that we can look at similar kinds of things. So that's kind of, you know, that was a good lesson for us. I guess, you know, one of the other things that I'd like to mention, which is not private sector, but which is public sector, we've managed to secure funding in Rand for a job creation project, which happens along the walk, but it's network. That is the priority for us, to roll out what we call urban rangers. So these would be in three shifts from 6 o'clock in the morning, and doing everything that you possibly can, humanly can, on a block, on a street. It's actually four blocks from a main intersection going up and down, left and right, or east and west. And these urban rangers would do everything except, let's say, arresting people and done something wrong. But anything else that you can imagine, including, you know, helping tourists with wayfinding, minor, and cleaning. So that is the one component, rolling this out across the walkable network and other areas. Also focusing inside SIDS to assist, especially those SIDS that are less resilient, but also outside in the unmanaged areas to also provide, you know, this there. Then also we're looking at some placemaking, and this placemaking, landscaping or other, fixing streetlights. One of the ideas that we're also looking at the walkable network have a different color globe so that at night you quickly identify it as safe. Also things such as painting intersections more safer in crossings, fixing repairs to walkways, signage, very important, but just the standard street names, but also, you know, your tourist attractions, destinations, those kinds, including that. So this program, which, as I said, over 100, will deal with all of these things. Will be the urban rangers with the biggest component, placemakers aspect. So that's public sector funding, but we don't, you know, it's so integrated. So we're hoping that the property sector, if it sees, and by the way, this funding via Treasury and via the city, if this is successful, then they said that it could be actually extended for another 3 years or 4 years. So it'll really have a major impact, I believe, that invest. So I want to say one more thing about the project, which is called Was Our Work.
Yes.
It has three main objectives. The one I've mentioned, which is job creation. The second one I've also mentioned, which is kind of urban management, you know, cleaning, but also the placemaking. And then the final one is it has an economic one. And that is the great thing is this whole project works on an app. So volunteers that would like to get involved as the urban rangers and other participants in the program, they register on an app. They then get allocated a particular intersection where they work from. They get their tools, equipment, and all of that from participating SIDS that we work with. And then finally, they can then, the earnings that they get are actually, it's digital currency called Zalatos, and they can then exchange those at participating businesses in the very same areas that they do. So, you know, it's really, you know, once again, what we're hoping to do is to create this kind of social and economic cohesion in these little villages, in the inner city, along the walkable network, but in this case, a little bit more also outside of the walkable, but the walkable network area.
So from a discussion with some stakeholders around what's possible to, you know, leveraging 100 million rand over 3 or 4 years from National Treasury, and obviously the excitement that generates from property owners who see a committed and vested public sector in their own neighborhood are really, you know, is very, very encouraging to hear, and creates, I'm sure, a lot of optimism. I just wanted to remark the idea of having, you know, the same people stationed around the same blocks. I know that Central Park, in the way that the maintenance crews work in that park environment, where they are responsible for particular areas where they would do all the maintenance, all the horticulture care, where previously they perhaps only cared for the grass or perhaps other aspects of the park. Maybe they were arborists with the trees. Now that there became a change where they were designated to take control over particular areas. And the Central Park as a whole really flourished off, especially after that, where you had people being able to take pride in their contribution for a particular location. Was that something in your thinking around the way that these urban rangers would work in this tight perimeter of the block radius that you mentioned?
No, absolutely. It's, you know, I can't say that we used that as a model, but it sounds like it's exactly the same kind of objectives. So rather to say, you know, here's a crew that does that, the crew that does that, you have a person that is working, or persons. Obviously, as I mentioned, you know, there'll be three shifts from 6 o'clock in the morning. You'd have three people that would be allocated to the same spot, and they'll be working their entire kind of, I mean, I mentioned the, you know, social cohesion. So I guess it's a bit of a kind of decide what we understand by that. But certainly, if someone is there every day, there's this whole sense of, this is the village that I'm actually, there's the shop that I'm buying my stuff at. These are the people that are living here, working, playing here, studying here. Mm-hmm. That whole sense of creating a community. And, you know, we've always said in the GICP to have an intergenerational social community where you have across the generation living there. In other words, we want the kind of, say, the economically active, but we also want the elders and we want the children. You know, the Joburg inner city has no public school, and that's something one of our priorities is secondary and bunch of private schools. But, you know, once you get this kind of social cohesion, the intergenerational aspect, the people that know each other, you get people that start caring for the area, and that's the thing that you can ever hope. You know, developers, you could argue, come in and out. They have a particular objective. Some of them stay for long. Yes, that is true. Government changes all the time. The leaderships, communities stay. So it's incredibly important. If you take city improvement districts, they are basically doing things because obviously mostly businesses, but also residents in an area want more than what. These are all things that are kind of fixing a problem, which is really something that's between the municipal government and the citizen. And active citizenry is such an important thing. And if we can, you know, contribute to that in any small way, I think we would. I just wanted to, Alan, perhaps just mention that the 111 million that we have for this was a work project. That's for 1 year. So if we are successful, the ideas that it would be, you know, increased to 4 years and hope, you know, at the same amount.
Very, very encouraging. And yeah, just it's remarkable that over the, you know, less than a decade, there's so much trust that's been built up between the GICP and the city, as well as the National Treasury and other players, where these ambitious projects amongst like-minded people can really take effect. Now, to wrap up, David, and also just to respect the time that you've put aside for this podcast, and I'm just throwing this out here. You know, I know that you enjoy making and listening to music. If you were to give the Walkable Network a backing track, what would that be?
That's a good one. That's a good one, Alan. I was actually commenting on a social media post by the Downtown Day, and they were saying, wow, it's great to be involved, Walkable Network, GICP. And I was saying, do you know what? What about Shirley Bassey? Shirley Bassey, yeah, Walk On By. So that's probably what I would come up with. It's a great song. I've always loved it. It has many different versions. People have covered it, but I do like the original one. So that's let's go with it.
And during the last 12 months, what fiction or nonfiction book or movie have you found valuable?
You know, when you say nonfiction, I have reread a book by Project for Public Spaces, I'm just trying to think what the book's name is. I think it's The Neighborhood Guide or The Neighborhood Book. I read that recently again. I can't remember. Oh, I remember why. A friend of mine was interested in creating their own SID in a city name, in a suburb. And I said, I've got a book that you should. And I was looking for it and then found it. And then before I gave it to him, I just reread it again. And it was just so great. And, you know, essentially just hit me again is that what we were discussing earlier on is this, the Latin name for it is communitas, the spirit of community. And I think we don't really understand that, respect the value of what that means for areas. So, I think I hope that is the right name. It's The Neighborhood Book. And then another one that I read, always refer to, is a small little book, which I have next to my bed. It's called I Am That. Eastern philosophers like to dabble in philosophies and the focus, right?
Well, just to wrap up, thank you for your time today. We're certainly going to have the material that you mentioned in the show notes. Finally, though, David, where can listeners find out more about you and your work?
Yeah, so we have Johannesburg Inner City Partnership, GICP. If you Google it, you'll get to our website address, but we are gicp.org.za. And we also, you can follow us on all of the various, you know, social media. We're on LinkedIn. We are on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I'm not sure exactly what the handles are for each of them. They pretty much, I guess, GICP do the trick. But yeah, get a hold of us.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much again, David. I appreciate your valuable input to the audience.
Thanks so much, Alan, and all the best to you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Places Plus podcast. For more episodes and to subscribe, rate, and leave a review, head on over to Spotify. And if you want to develop an influential and profitable approach to public and shared spaces, learn more about our methodologies at placesplus.co.za.